Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Finance Diaries. My name is Stephanie and I'm here to teach you just about everything there is to know about personal finances. The stuff that you didn't learn in school, that your friends and family don't seem to talk about very much, and that is quite frankly treated like it's a secret. You could even say a secret diary. I'm here to unlock and open up that secret diary for you, and that's why I welcome you today to the Finance Diaries. Today's episode is not about COVID. It's about everything post-COVID. So I know that we're completely sick of hearing that word and that we don't want to talk about it anymore. And I fully get that. But there is a financial aspect to everything that we've lived through for the last year and a half. So maybe this happened for you a couple months ago where you live. Maybe it's happening now. Maybe it's coming soon. But the world is reopening and the world is going back to somewhat of a normal. And how can we make sure that our finances are in the best position ever as we move forward and come out of this? So there's some people that you've gone through the most financially devastating time. Maybe you lost your one and only source of income. There are people that had to make some serious choices and sell their homes or whatever it is that you had to do in the last year. And then there are people that have been financially thriving. Maybe you work in an industry that was really just booming this year, or maybe you had even more work opportunities, or you had so many different income streams that it was great for you. So how can we be in the best financial position as we exit and continue on with our lives? The first thing I think that we can agree to take a look at is our forms of income, our streams of income. So if you were in March 2020, and you only had one single income stream, which was your earned income, aka your job. So that's one of the income streams that you can have. It's like getting a paycheck. That's your earned income. And your company had to let people go or went out of business or whatever happened, then you would have lost 100% of your income. So in that sort of situation, it's when we realize that we should definitely have multiple sources of income. So the main thing that I want to touch on here is that that doesn't mean having five different jobs. That doesn't mean that you should be dedicating more hours in a day than you feel comfortable with to work, because there's such thing as passive income. If you listen back to my podcast from the month of May, it was the Make More Money month of May, where I talked about how you can find different income streams based on your passions, whether they're active or passive. So I don't want you to think that another job always means more work. There's going to be a certain degree of it, but it doesn't mean that you're going to become someone who's busy 24/7. So anyways, I just went off a little bit there, but this means all about your income streams. So how many can you get is probably what should be your goal. I would ideally like to have every single one of the different forms of income. I'm working on it. I'm still not at royalty income and I'm working on rental income, so having rental properties. But these are all different things that are really important to have, because if you were in a situation that, God forbid, there was like something else that you lost your job, I'm not saying another pandemic, but then you would have something else to rely on other than your emergency funds. So that brings me into the second pillar of our finances. So obviously, yes, as many income streams as possible, so that if one of them or two of them were to disappear or be reduced or whatever, that you wouldn't, like, the world wouldn't end for you, that you wouldn't lose your house, your car, whatever. So the next pillar is about your savings, because your savings are important to a certain extent. Because yes, you might have multiple income streams, but maybe your job is your main biggest one and losing that would be really tremendous. So that brings us into emergency savings. I think that maybe before the pandemic, we kind of felt like, to a certain extent, oh, if I lose my job, I'll just find something else. Because, well, it depends how old you are, I guess. But I'm in my 20s. And during the 2008 recession, I was not yet in the workforce. So I don't recall that happening. And also, again, it depends where you live. Because if you're one of my listeners in Europe or Australia, you were much less affected than an American person would have been. So I think that it was kind of like out of sight, out of mind. And people were just figuring, oh, well, worst case, I'll just find another job. But finding a job was really difficult for certain parts of the last year and a half. And I don't want to say that that's exclusive to a pandemic, because that happens during any sort of recession, or again, God forbid, a depression, which I hopefully we will not go into. But all of these different things mean that it's very important for us to have something to fall back on, to have, I guess, a cushion of sorts, because we don't know what the job market would be like, and we can't just assume that we'll find something else. I always say, like, if things really came down to it, that I would just find any sort of job that I could work at that would be hiring. But there were so many places that weren't even hiring. And I think I read something that said that a girl had applied for a job at a fast food place, and that there were 116 applications for a single position. And like, that's insane. Because it, in my head, I'm like, okay, well, I would just do whatever I can. But anyways, I'm going on a tangent again. So that is the entire point of emergency savings. I've talked about this a few times before, but I'm just going to reiterate. The emergency savings, the amount that you need in your emergency savings, completely depends on your personal situation. And it should regularly be reevaluated. If you are a single person who has no dependents and you're not in a partnership of some sort or something like that, then obviously your emergency savings requirements could be a lot lower than someone who's the breadwinner for a family of four, the sole breadwinner, and needs to pay everything for everyone. So the general rule of thumb is 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. And 3 to 6 months worth of expenses includes everything that you would have to continue to pay. So yes, you might want to cancel your phone bill, but maybe you're in a contract and you can't cancel it and you still need to pay a certain amount. So I want you to sit down and think of every single bill that you have to pay in a month that you can't just turn around and cancel. Because like, I think some stuff, I mean, again, it depends where you live, but you could like cancel your cable, you could cancel your music subscription or your TV subscription services, like your Netflix, Spotify, that stuff. But there are things that you have to continue to pay. So I want you to think of how comfortable you feel. It's a personal choice to use 3, 4, 5, 6 months or more, and to have all of that money and to put it into a high yield savings account. So this isn't financial advice. It's just common knowledge, is that that's the best amount of interest that we can get, that we will have our money readily accessible during a poor financial situation. So the reason you don't invest a savings account, an emergency savings account, is, let's say, for example, exactly like COVID, the job market goes terribly wrong, and everyone loses their jobs. But at the same time, the stock market also takes a massive, massive hit. And let's say things hadn't turned out the way that they did and that the stock market ended up bouncing back incredibly. Well, if there was this big financial time of horrible stock performances, then your savings, your emergency savings, wouldn't be in any way helpful to you, because they're not worth the 3 to 6 months that they were supposed to be. So your high yield savings account is essentially a bank account. The reason that they're able to give you, so this is important, when you look up a high yield savings account, high interest savings account, you want to find a place that it is an interest rate that they will give you that doesn't change. Because a lot of big banks, what they're doing is they'll say like, okay, 3% interest rate, but then it turns out it's only for 3 months and then it goes to like 0.01. So the reason that there are high yield savings accounts, so places that'll give you like 1.5% or something like that, is because generally they don't have a brick and mortar business. So they don't have physical locations. And because they're saving on the insurance from that and the building itself, the rents, the people that need to work there, the electricity, blah, 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 they're transferring those savings to you to encourage you to put your money with them. So in Canada, I always look at RateHub. You can look based on which province you live in, which account is available. They're easy to open, and then you can just put your money in there and then forget about it until the next time you reevaluate your situation. So if you were a single person And then maybe a year from now, you're no longer a single person, then maybe you would want to reevaluate how much is in there. If you were to get pregnant or have a partner who's expecting or whatever the situation is, or adopt or anything, then again, you would want to reevaluate how much money you have in there, because your expenses would change versus when you were just a single person. So that's the whole part that has to do with savings. And then maybe as an additional side note, some people will always use bad financial times as opportunities, right? Like if we think back to 2008, maybe you don't remember, but you could look it up too if you want. Houses were, especially in the US, were almost like worthless. Like I remember being, I was in Miami, I think in 2008, 2009. And the Uber driver told my family, because we always were the chatty family, told my family that he is now Uber driving because he had multiple income properties. He owned like 7 properties or something like that. And that the tenants moved out because they didn't want to pay the rent anymore. And that he couldn't even sell them. Like, it's not even he was going to lose money on them. There was physically no one buying homes. So he had to start Ubering to be able to pay for mortgages because he didn't have tenants in all of them. And anyways, very, very big thing. But as devastating as that is, also, you have to remember that it could be a good financial opportunity, especially with how insane the housing market is. If there were something to happen again, like that would make house prices be affected like that, then it could be a very good opportunity for a new buyer. Which means that, as usual, cash is king, and it's very useful to have cash. But then with inflation rates, obviously you don't want just like money under your mattress. You would want as much as possible to have it in a high-yield savings account based on what your plans are. So again, that depends. I'm not saying to stack your bank account to pay for cash for a house. It's more like to keep in mind what your goals are and to have your accounts reflecting that. So in general, when we think of what we want to have in a high yield savings account versus what we want to have invested, is more about time. So let's say, for example, you want to buy a house in 3 years, then maybe you wouldn't necessarily keep that in your high yield savings account because you could have some time to build it up if you were investing it. And that choice is up to you, and obviously do the thinking about it, about what makes the most sense. So then there's another few aspects to our finances post-COVID. There's one that's quite important, is that maybe you had to withdraw money because you didn't have these savings accounts. Maybe you had to withdraw from a retirement fund and get heavily taxed on it. Maybe you had to borrow money from someone. And you really want to sort that out as quickly as possible and get back on track of how you were in 2019. I know that like we can't even mentally picture a world of 20. I mean, I personally can't. I don't know if you can. I can't even remember. I don't even know. Anyways, you want to the best of your abilities to try to get your finances in that sense back on track, to pay off those loans and that debt, and to get back into funding your retirement accounts, because those are very important moving forward, because the world is going to continue and retirement is still hopefully on the horizon. So that's something that needs to be addressed. And then the biggest element that I think is important to bring up is how exactly, with everything going on, like how I mean, I guess it depends where you live. Where I live, there are things slowly reopening. Restaurants, indoor dining rooms have just reopened, and people are starting to go places again. People are slowly starting to travel again. Well, how do we keep these financial habits that you might have gotten during the pandemic? So some people told me that they have become the best savers ever and that they haven't spent a penny because there's nowhere to spend money. And then there's some people that have been completely unable to stop online shopping. So I recommend you listen to my Stephanie's method on spending podcast if you're having trouble cutting your expenses. But how do you keep your finances relatively stable as the world reopens and that you continue to make choices that leave you with more money at the end of the day in your pocket than $0. So basically, you want to continue investing. You want to continue being able to save up for an income property or whatever it is that you want to do financially speaking. But maybe you're being invited out to terraces every day and you're going to restaurants a lot and you want to make up for lost time. So you're spending money left, right, and center. And yes, that is an absolutely huge issue because I'm facing it too. I want to see my friends. I want to do things. I want to start traveling again. I feel like maybe I won't really be traveling outside of Canada for the next little while, but I have a trip planned in August, and I want to also not go buck wild and blow all of my money that I have. So how do we do that? Well, guys, you guessed it, the famous word, budgeting. When we have a proper budget, it doesn't mean that you're like, oh guys, sorry, check my budget, like can't do that. Like not at all. So what I do is that I think of, okay, this is my budget. This is probably equal to like X amount of times that I can go to a restaurant. And maybe if I save on one time of going to a restaurant, instead, that would be two times of having like wine and cheese and drinks or whatever at home, or like doing something like a picnic in a park instead of going to a restaurant. Restaurants are a huge one for me, or trying to find activities and things to do that aren't necessarily the most expensive. So like for example, I really like to golf, and some golf courses are really, really expensive to go to. So I think like, okay, well, if I'm going to go to this golf course this week, then I can't spend this much in a restaurant. So maybe what I'll do is I'll tell my friends, why don't you guys come over to my house and we'll have drinks and we'll make brunch. And then everyone kind of brings something and then we all make a big brunch together. And then that way I'm equalizing how much I'm spending, because we have this thing often that we think that we can't say no or propose an alternative solution. And I mean, my job is literally that. I'm a consultant. So we are always thinking of different solutions that will make things work. So maybe that's more my mindset. And to me, it's very logical to do that. But for some people, you just don't have the habit. So it's not necessarily something that you're used to doing. But it's something that you need to start to do, because otherwise, you're just going to end up having your finances spiral out of control. It's not like, it's not an if, it will happen. Because if you are completely unable to say no to a certain plan or proposing an alternative, then you're going to end up spending way more money than you want to. Or even worse than that, you're going to say no and then not go at all and then feel like you're the one friend that's missing out. And you know, you don't have to change everyone's plans all the time. Maybe they're like, hey, we're going out to this super nice restaurant, or we're going out for drinks or whatever. And you can say, hey, I can't really make it tonight, or I don't know, whatever you want to say. Maybe you want to go and I don't know, whatever you want to do. But you can say like, hey, let's get ready and have drinks at my house. Like that doesn't change anyone's plans. Like that doesn't affect the dinner that they still want to go to. And it's not about being boring or about like having no social life or anything like that, because as if you're budgeting properly, you shouldn't feel limited. Like I'm just saying, I have these concessions sometimes because sometimes I go way over my budget and it happens. And we just need to make sure that that's not a regular occurrence and that we're not doing this all the time. Otherwise, that's how we can really open up the floodgates to problems. So I know these topics we've talked about before, about the importance of having multiple income streams and about the importance of having the emergency funds and having your savings readily available. And then of course, budgeting. But again, these four pillars are pretty much what finances come down to at the end of the day. And when we've mastered them and we really understand them really well, that's how we can get ahead so well financially. I don't know what situation you're personally in. Maybe this was the worst financial year of your life. Maybe this was the best one. Maybe you're somewhere in the middle and you don't really feel like things change very much. But again, massive change in the world, it gives us a really great opportunity. you know, everyone has to a certain extent changed in some way this year, whether it was financial, personal, emotional, whatever, anything. And you can leave this with a better financial situation than you started in. And no matter what happened in the past, you can definitely come out of that and you can rebuild and be better for the next time that something does happen. I'm not saying another pandemic, but finances and economics and everything, the world is cyclical. And these kinds of things happen, like recessions and stuff, tend to happen about every 10 years. So it is important to be prepared and to understand what's coming for anything potentially in the future, and to be so prepared that when something does happen, that you're hardly even bothered by it. Wouldn't that be an ideal world, right? So thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Finance Diaries. It has been an absolute pleasure to explain all of this to you today, and I hope that you have a great rest of your day.